Chapter 15 Between Brethren 1 Does Jerome know that you're asking me to do this? No. Locke stood beside Drakasha at the taffrail, huddled close to her so they could converse privately. It was the seventh hour of the morning, more or less, and the sun was ascending into a cloudless bowl of blue sky. The wind was from the east, a touch abaft their starboard beam, and the waves were getting rowdy. "And you feel that..." "Yes, I do feel that I can speak for both of us," said Locke. "There's no other choice. We won't see Stragos again unless you do as he asks, and to be frank, if you do as he asks, I think our usefulness ends. We'll have one more chance at physical access to him. It's time to show this fucker how we used to do things in Camor."
"I thought you specialized in dishonest finesse."
"I also do a brisk trade in putting knives to people's throats and shouting at them," said Locke. "But if you request another meeting after we sink a few ships for him, don't you think he'll be prepared for treachery? Especially in a palace crowded with soldiers?" "All I have to do is get close to him," said Locke. "I'm not going to pretend I could fight my way through a wall of guards, but from 6 inches with a good stiletto, I'm the hand of Azaguia herself."
"Hold him hostage, then?"
"Simple, direct, hopefully effective. If I can't trick an antidote out of him or cut a deal with his apothecary, maybe I can frighten him half to death."
"And you honestly believe you've thought this through?"
"Captain Drakasha, I could barely sleep for pondering it. Why do you think I wandered back here to find you?"
"Captain!"
The mainmast watch was hailing the deck.
"Got action behind us!"
"What do you mean?"
"Sail may be 3 points off the larboard quarter at the horizon. Just came around real sudden. Went from sort of westerly to pointed right at us."
"Good eyes," said Drakasha. "Keep me informed. Utgar."
"Aye, Captain."
"Double the watch on each mast. On deck there. Make ready for a course change. Stand by, tacks and braces. Wait for my word."
"Real trouble, Captain?"
"Probably not," said Drakasha. "Even if Stragos had changed his mind since yesterday and decided to hunt us down now, a Varari warship wouldn't be coming from that direction."
"Hopefully."
"Aye. So what we do is we change our own heading, nice and slow. If their course change was innocent, they'll sail merrily past." She cleared her throat.
"Helm, come round northwest by north, smartly. Utgar, get the yards braced for a wind on the starboard quarter."
"Aye, Captain."
The poison orchid slowly heeled even farther to larboard, until she was headed almost due northwest. The stiff breeze now blew across the quarterdeck, nearly into Locke's face. To the south, he fancied that he could see tiny sails. From the deck, the vessel was still hull down. A few minutes later came the shout,
"Captain! She's come 5 or 6 points to her larboard! She's for us again!"
"We're off her starboard bow," said Drakasha. "She's trying to close with us. But that doesn't make sense." She snapped her fingers. "Wait! Might be a bounty privateer."
"How could they know it's us?"
"Probably got a description of the orchid from the crew of that ketch you visited. Look, we could only hope to disguise my girl for so long. These lovely witchwood planks of hers are too distinctive."
"So, how much of a problem is this?"
"Depends on who's got the speed. If she's a bounty privateer, that's a profitless fight. She'll be carrying dangerous folk and no swag. So if we're the faster, I mean to show her our ass and wave farewell."
"And if not?"
"A profitless fight."
"Captain!" hollered one of the top eyes. "She's a three-master!"
"This just gets better and better," said Drakasha. "Go wake up Ezri and Jerome for me."
2.
"Bad luck," said Del Mastro. "Bad damned luck."
"Only for them, if I have my way," said Zamira.
The captain and her lieutenant stood at the taffrail, staring at the faint square of white that marked their pursuer's position on the horizon. Locke waited with Jean a few steps away at the starboard rail. Drakasha had nudged the ship a few points south, so that they were travelling west-northwest with the wind fine on the starboard quarter, what she claimed was the Orchid's best point of sail. Locke knew this was something of a risk. If their opponent was the faster, they could lay an intercepting course that would bring them up much sooner than a stern chase. The trouble was that such a chase to the north could not last. Unlimited sea room existed only to their west.
"I'm not sure we're gaining any ground, Captain," said Del Mastro after a few minutes of silence.
"Nor I. Damn this jumpy sea. If she's a three-master, she may have the weight to carve a better speed out of it."
"Captain!"
The cry from up the mainmast was even more urgent than usual.
"Captain, she's not falling away! And, Captain, begging pardon, but you might want to come and see this for yourself."
"See what?"
"If I ain't mad, I've seen that ship before," shouted the watchwoman. "I'd swear it. I'd appreciate another set of eyes."
"I'll take a look," said Del Mastro. "Mind if I fetch up your favourite glass?" "Drop it, and I'll give your cabin over to Paolo and Cosetta." Locke watched as Del Mastro went up the mainmast a few minutes later, armed with Zamira's pride and joy, a masterpiece of Ferrari optics bound in alchemically treated leather. It was a few minutes more before her shout fell to the deck.
"Captain, that's the Dread Sovereign!"
"What?
Del, are you absolutely sure?" "Seen her often enough, haven't I?"
"I'm coming up myself." Locke exchanged a stare with Jean as Zamira leapt into the mainmast shrouds. A buzz of muttering and swearing had arisen among the crewfolk on deck. About a dozen abandoned their chores and headed aft, craning their necks for a glimpse of the sail in the south. They cleared away in alarm when Drakasha and Del Mastro returned to the quarterdeck, looking grim.
"So it's him?" said Locke.
"It is," said Drakasha. "And if he's been looking for us for any length of time, it means he sailed not all that long after we did."
"So he could be carrying a message or something, right?"
"No." Drakasha removed her hat and ran her other hand through her braids, almost nervously. "He opposed this plan more than anyone else on the Council of Captains. He didn't sail as long and as far as we did to risk his ship within spitting distance of Tal Vahrar to deliver any message."
"I'm afraid we'll need to postpone our previous conversation, Ravel. The point is moot until we're sure this ship will still be floating at the end of the day."
3. Locke stared out across the white caps at the Dread Sovereign, now well over the horizon, fixed on them like a needle drawn toward a lodestone. It was the 10th hour of the morning, and Rodanoff's progress at their expense was obvious. Zamira slammed her glass shut and whirled away from the taffrail, where she'd been studying the same phenomenon.
"Captain," said Del Mastro, "there must be something. If we can just keep him off until nightfall..."
"Then we'd have options, aye. But only a straight stern chase could buy us that much time. And if we fly north, we'll find the coast long before dusk. Not to mention the fact that she's fresh careened and we're past due. The plain truth is, we've already lost this race."
Drakasha and Del Mastro said nothing to each other for several moments, until Del Mastro cleared her throat.
"I'll start getting things ready, shall I?"
"You'd better. Let the Red Watch keep sleeping as long as you can, if any of them are still asleep."
Del Mastro nodded, grabbed Jean by the tunic sleeve, and pulled him with her toward the main deck cargo hatch.
"You mean to fight?" said Locke.
"I have no choice but to fight, and neither do you, if you want to live to see dinner. Rodanoff has nearly twice our numbers. You understand what a mess we're looking at."
"And it's all for my sake, more or less. I'm sorry, Captain."
"Avast bullshit, Ravel. I won't second-guess my decision to help you, so no one else gets to either. This is Stragos' doing, not yours.
One way or another, his plans would have put us in a tight spot. Thank you for that, Captain Drakasha. Now, I know we've had our talk concerning the real extent of my skills in battle, but most of the crew probably still thinks I'm some sort of man-killer. I guess I'm saying...
You want a spot in the thick of it?
Yes.
Thought you might ask. I already have a place for you, she said. Don't think you'll have it easy.
She stepped away for a moment and shouted forward.
Utgar?
Aye, Captain.
Fetch the deep-sea lead and give me a cast.
Locke raised his eyebrows by way of a question, and she said,
Need to know how much water we have beneath our feet. Then I'll know about how long it'll take the anchor to drop.
Why would you want to drop an anchor?
On that matter, you'll just have to wait to be amazed, along with Radanov, hopefully, but that would be asking a great deal.
Captain! Utgar yelled several minutes later. Got about 90 fathoms under us!
Right, she said. Ravel, I know you're off watch right now, but you were witless enough to wander back here and call attention to yourself. Grab a couple of blues and bring up some ale casks from down below. Try to stay quiet for the sake of the red still sleeping. I'll call all hands in about an hour, and it's never wise to send people into a tussle like this with their throats too dry.
I'll be happy to do that, Captain. About an hour, then? When do you think we'll be?
I mean to bring the fight before noon. Only one way to win when you're being chased by someone bigger and tougher than you are. Turn straight around, punch their teeth out, and hope the gods are fond of you.
4.
All hands! Shouted Ezri one last time. All hands at the waist! Idlers and lazy motherfuckers on deck! If you have watchmates still below, haul 'em up yourselves!
Jean stood at the front of the crowd amidships, waiting for Drakasha to say her piece. She stood at the rail with Ezri, Nazreen, Utgar, Mumchance, Gwillem, and Tregan behind her. The scholar looked deeply annoyed that something as trivial as a murderous ship-to-ship fight could justify disrupting her usual habits.
"Listen well!" shouted Drakasha. "The ship bearing down on us is the Dread Sovereign. Captain Radanov has taken exception to our business in these waters, and he's come a long way to give us a fight."
We can't fight that many people, shouted someone in the crowd.
It's not as though we have a choice. They're closing to board now, whether we like it or not, said Drakasha.
But what if it's just you he's after?
A crewman Jean didn't recognize spoke up. To give him credit, he too was standing at the front of the crowd, right where Drakasha and all of her officers could see him.
We give you to him. We save ourselves a hell of a fight. This isn't a navy, and I got the right to be as fond of my life as...
Jabril pushed through the crowd behind the man and punched him in the small of the back. The man fell writhing to the deck.
We don't know that it's just Drakasha he wants, Jabril shouted. Me? I ain't waiting at the rail with my breeches down for someone to kiss my cock. Most of you know as well as I. If captain fights captain, it ain't convenient to let two sides of the story get back to Port Prodigal.
Hold, Jabril, said Zamira.
She hurried down the quarterdeck stairs, stepped over to the would-be pragmatist, and helped him sit up. She then stood before her assembled crew, within reach of the first row.
Bazarin here is right about one thing. This isn't a navy, so you do have the right to be fond of your own lives. I'm not your goddamned empress. Anyone wants to try handing me over to Radanov, I'm right here. Now is your chance.
When nobody stepped forward from the crowd, Drakasha heaved Bazarin to his feet and looked him straight in the eyes.
Now you can have the smallest boat, she said. You and anyone else who wants to help you take it. Or you can stay.
Oh, hell, he said, groaning. I'm sorry, Captain. I guess I'd rather live as a coward than die a fool.
Oskal, said Drakasha, when we're done here, get a party together and hoist out the small boat, on the quick.
Anyone else wants off with Bazrin, that's what I'm giving you. If Rodanov wins, take your chances. If I win, understand that we're at least 50 miles from land and you're not coming back aboard.
The man nodded, and that was that. Drakasha released him and he stumbled into the crowd, holding his back and ignoring the glares of those around him.
"Heed this now!" shouted Drakasha. "The sea isn't our friend today. That son of a bitch has more bite in the water than we do. A chase in any direction can't buy us more than a few hours. If we're going to settle this at kissing distance, I intend to set the terms of the courtship. We need to kill 2 for 1 just to have any of us left standing. So obviously we need to do better even than that. If we lock up with him so that one of our sides is against his bow, we can crowd in all around his boarding point and outnumber him at the only place it matters. That big fat crew of his won't mean a damn thing if he has to feed it piece by piece right through our teeth. So, at the waist, I'll put you in ranks, like the old Therin Throne legions. Swords and shields up front, spears and halberds behind. Don't take your sweet time. If you can't kill someone, knock them into the water. Just get them out of the damn fight. Del will choose our 10 best archers and send you aloft to do the obvious. 5 per mast. I wish I could send more, but we're going to need every blade on deck we can get. Ravel, Valora, I'm going to give you a few crew folk to form our flying company. Your job is the Sovereign's boats. They'll try and board us from all points of the compass once we're engaged at the waist. So you go wherever they go. One person on deck can keep 5 in a boat, provided you act with haste. Nazreen, you'll choose a party of 3 and stand by at the starboard anchor for my command. Once it's given, you'll guard the bow against boats and free Ravel's party to fight elsewhere. Utgar, you're with me to load crossbows. Now, there's ale at the forecastle, and I want to see the cask dry before we do this. Drink up, find your armor. If you've got mail or leathers you've been saving, pile it on. I don't care how much you sweat, you'll never need it again like you'll need it today.
Drakasha dismissed the crew by turning away from them and striding back up the quarterdeck stairs. Pandemonium erupted amidships. Suddenly, crew folk were shoving past one another in all directions, some going for their armor and weapons, others headed for what might be their last drink in life. Ezri vaulted the quarterdeck railing and shouted as she strode forward into the chaos.
"Fire watches, set double sand buckets! Rig the larboard razor net and hoist it high! Jerome, get your lazy ass up on the quarterdeck! Form up the flying company there!"
Jean waved and followed Drakasha up to the stern of the ship, where Utgar waited, looking nervous. Tregan was just descending the companionway stairs, muttering something about bulk rates. Suddenly, a low, dark shape shot up the companionway and ran for Drakasha. She looked down in response to a sudden tug on her breeches and found Paolo clutching at her, unselfconsciously.
"Mommy, the noise!"
Zamira smiled and swept him up off the deck, cradling him against the lapels of her jacket. She turned into the wind and let it push her hair out of her face. Jean could see that Paolo's eyes were on the dread sovereign as it heaved and swayed beneath the cloudless sky, implacably clawing across the distance between them.
"Paolo, love, Mommy needs you to help her hide you and your sister in the rope locker on the all-up deck, all right?"
The little boy nodded, and Zamira kissed him on the forehead, burying her nose in his tangle of short dark curls with her eyes closed.
"Oh, good," she said a moment later, "because after that, Mommy needs to fetch her armor and her sabers, and then she needs to go board that lying motherfucker's ship and sink it like a stone."
5. Jafrim Rodanov was at the bow of his ship, the poison orchid steady in the center of his glass, when she suddenly whirled to larboard and pointed herself at him like an arrow. Her mainsails shivered and began to vanish as Drakasha's crew hauled them up for battle.
"Ah," he said, "there we go, Zamira, doing the only sensible thing at last."
Radanov had dressed for a fight, as usual, in a leather coat reinforced with mail inset at the back and the lapels. The nicks and creases in the battered old thing were always a comfort to him, a reminder that people had been trying and failing to kill him for years. On his hands he wore his favoured segmented blackened steel gauntlets. In the confusion of a close melee, they could catch blades and break skulls. For the less personal work of actually forcing his way aboard the Orchid, he leaned on a waist-high, iron-studded club. He folded his glass carefully and slipped it into a pocket, resolving to return it to the binnacle before the fight began. Not like the last time.
"Orders, Captain?"
Idrena waited on the forecastle stairs, her own curved sword sheathed on her back, with the majority of his crew ready behind her.
"She's for us!" boomed Radanov. "I know this doesn't come easy, but Rakasha's raiding in Varari waters. She'll call down hell on the life we all enjoy, unless we stop her now. Form up to starboard as we planned. Shields up front, crossbows behind. Remember, one volley, then throw 'em down and pull steel. Boat crews over the starboard side once we're locked with the Orchid. Grapples ready at the waist and bow. Helm, you have your orders. Make it perfect or pray you die in the fight. This day will be red. The Rakasha is a foe to be reckoned with. But what are we over all the winds and waters of the Sea of Brass? Sovereign!" the crew shouted as one. "Who are we, never boarded and never beaten? Sovereign! What do our enemies scream when they speak the name of their doom at the judgment of the gods? Sovereign! We are!" He waved his club above his head. "And we have some surprises for Zamira Drakasha. Bring the cages forward!"
Three teams of six sailors apiece brought canvas-covered cages to the forecastle deck. These cages had wooden carrying handles set well beyond their steel mesh sides. They were about 6 feet long and half as wide and high.
"Nothing to eat since yesterday, right?"
"No," said Idrena.
"Good."
Radanov double-checked the sections of the starboard rail his carpenter had weakened, so one good shove would knock them over for about a 10-foot length, a blemish on his beloved sovereign, but one that could be fixed easily enough later.
"Set them down over here, and kick the cages. Let's get them riled up."
6. The two ships crashed through the waves toward each other, and for a second time Loch Lamora found himself about to get involved rather intimately in a battle at sea.
"Steady, mum," called
Drakasha, who stood peering out over the larboard quarterdeck rail. Locke and Jean waited nearby, armed with hatchets and sabres. Jean also had a pair of leather bracers liberated from the property of Bazarin, who was nowhere to be seen since he alone had gone over the side with the small boat. "My boat," Locke thought, somewhat bitterly. For their flying company, Locke and Jean had Malakasti, Jabril, and Striva, as well as Gwillem. All save the latter had shields and spears. The timid-looking quartermaster wore a leather apron stuffed with heavy lead bullets for the sling he carried in his left hand. Most of the crew waited amidships, ranked as Drakasha had ordered. Those with large shields and stabbing swords up front, those with pole arms in back. The mainsails were drawn up. Fire buckets were set out, the larboard entry port was protected by what Del Mastro had called a skinner net, and the poison Orchid was rushing to the dread sovereign's embrace like a long separated lover. Del Mastro appeared out of the mess at the waist. She looked much as she had the first time Locke had ever seen her, with her leather armor on and her hair pulled back for action. Paying no heed to the weapons they were carrying at their belts, she leapt onto Jean, wrapping her arms and legs around him. He put his arms behind her back and they kissed until Locke chuckled out loud. Not the sort of thing one saw just before most battles, he imagined.
"This day is ours," she said when they parted at last.
"Try not to kill everyone over there before I even get involved, right?
Jean grinned down at her, and she handed him something in a small silk bag.
"What's this?"
"Lock of my hair," she said. "Meant to give it to you days ago, but we got busy with all the raiding. You know, piracy, hectic life."
"Thank you, love," he said.
"Now, if you find yourself in trouble wherever you go, you can hold up that little bag to whoever's bothering you, and you can say, 'You have no idea who you're fucking with. I'm under the protection of the lady who gave me this object of her favor.'"
"And that's supposed to make them stop?"
"Shit, no. That's just to confuse them. Then you kill them while they're standing there looking at you funny."
They hugged again, and Drakasha cleared her throat.
"Del, if it's not too much trouble, we're planning to attack that ship just ahead of us, so could you..."
"Oh, yeah, the fight of our lives. I guess I could help you out for a few minutes, Captain."
"Luck, Del."
"Luck, Zamira."
"Captain," said Mum Chance. "Now..."
"Nazreen," Drakasha bellowed at the top of her considerable voice. "Starboard anchor away!"
"Sound collision," called Del Mastro a moment later. "All hands brace yourselves, up aloft, grab a mast, grab a line."
Someone began to ring the foremast bell frantically. The two ships were closing with astonishing speed. Locke and Jean crouched on the larboard quarterdeck stairs, clinging tight to the inner rail. Locke glanced over at Drakasha and saw that she was counting something, mouthing each number intently to herself. Curious, he tried to puzzle them out and concluded she wasn't counting in Therin.
"Captain," said Mum Chance, calm as someone ordering coffee. "Other ship."
"Helm hard a larboard,"
Drakasha shouted. Mum Chance and his mate began manhandling the ship's wheel to the left. Suddenly there was a creak and a snapping noise from the bow. The ship shuddered end to end and was jerked to starboard as though caught in the teeth of a gale. Locke felt his stomach protesting and clung to the rail with all of his strength.
"Anchor party!" yelled Drakasha. "Cut the cable!"
Locke had an excellent view of the dread sovereign rushing down on them, scarcely 100 yards away. He gasped to think of that heavy ship's bowsprit plunging like a spear into the Orchid or her masked crewfolk, but even as he watched, the three-master heeled over to larboard, making a turn of her own. Radanov avoided a head-on collision, and Locke had to guess that was intentional. While it might have done serious damage to the Orchid, it would have locked his ship precisely where Zamira could best resist his boarders, and possibly sunk both ships sooner or later. What happened was spectacular enough. The sea creamed white between the two vessels, and Locke heard the protesting waves hissing like steam baking furiously from hot coals. There was no way for the Sovereign or the Orchid to shed all their forward momentum, but they slid into each other along their sides with a rolling cushion of water between them. The whole world seemed to shake as they met. Timbers creaked, masts shuddered, and high overhead an Orchid was pitched from her position. She struck the Sovereign's deck, becoming the first casualty of the battle.
"Spanker! Spanker!"
Zamira cried, and everyone on the quarterdeck looked up in unison as the Orchid's spanker sail was unfurled in the most unseamanlike fashion possible by the small crew detailed to it. Fluttering down to full extension, it was braced in place with desperate speed. Ordinarily, the fore and aft sail would never have been placed side on to a wind, but in this case the stiff breeze from the east pushed against it by intention, heaving the Orchid's stern away from contact with the dread Sovereign. Mum Chance hauled his wheel to starboard now, trying to help the process along. There was a series of screams and snapping noises from forward. The dread Sovereign's bowsprit was destroying or fouling much of the forward rigging, but Drakasha's plan seemed to be working. That bowsprit hadn't punched a hole in the hull, and now Radanov's starboard bow was the only part of his ship in contact with Drakasha's larboard side. From high above, Locke thought, the gods might have seen the two ships as drunken fencers, their bowsprits crossed but doing relatively little harm as they waved about. Unseen things clawed the air with a snake-like hiss, and Locke realized that arrows were raining around him. The fight had well and truly begun. 7.
"Clever Syresti bitch," muttered Rodanov as he crawled back to his feet after the collision. Drakasha was using her spanker for leverage to prevent full broadside-to-broadside contact. So be it. He had his own advantages ready to play.
"Let 'em loose!" he shouted.
A crewman standing well back from the rear of the three cages, with shield bearers flanking him, pulled the rope that released their doors. These were set just inches back from the collapsible section of the rail, which had been conveniently knocked clean away when the ships met. A trio of adult Valkona, starving, shaken up, and pissed off beyond all measure, exploded from their confinement, shrieking like the vengeful undead. The first thing they laid eyes on was the group of orchids lining up across the way. Though heavily armed and armored, Zamira's people had no doubt expected to repel human boarders first. The three attack birds launched themselves through the air and landed amidst shields and polearms, laying about with their beaks and their dagger-sized claws. Orchids screamed, shoved against one another, and caused utter chaos in their desperate struggle to either swing at or flee from the ferocious beasts. Rodanov grinned fiercely. They'd been worth it, even though they'd cost too much in Prodigal, even though they'd stunk up the hold, even though they'd be dead soon enough. Every orchid they mutilated was one less for his people to face, and it was always impossible to put a price on making your enemy shit their britches.
"Away, boats!" he yelled. "Sovereigns, on me!"